reparations.
The reparations.
Reparations. That, you know, there was an attempt for reparations way back right after the war in the 50s, is you know, if I remember correctly. But they were also asked at that time to produce receipts of what was lost, etc. So it was a big fight, and it came from the community itself. And it was something that even Japanese Americans, my parents, for example, did not want to talk about. It was a shameful, and, you know, in terms of blaming the victim, they really felt that, you know, let bygones be bygones.
The government.
Well, and Japanese Americans as well. But I think, you know, and that's what, you
we
know,
have part 5 seconds.
And we needed to bring out the truth and ask our parents to really talk about what had been covered up.
Well, we're going to leave it there, but it certainly won't be the last time we discuss this. Richard Reeves, author of Infinity, The Shocking Story of the Japanese American Internment in World War II, and Karen Ishizuka, third-generation American of Japanese descent, who was part of the Asian American movement in Los Angeles.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. We're looking for your help to subvert the spring drive. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us raise $25,000 before the start of the drive. If we make that goal, we'll take a day off the drive. Better still, if you donate now until April 21st, you'll be entered in our spring sweepstakes drawing. Prizes include 2 VIP passes to this year's Waterfront Blues Festival. Win gift certificates to Revolution Hall and Mississippi Studios, or be entered to win our grand prize of $1,000 in airfare to go anywhere you want. Rules and prizes can be found at kboo.fm/2016 Spring Sweeps. No purchase necessary to be entered in the sweepstakes. Coming up next is more talk radio with guest host Doug Mavey. Today's guest is David Borden, founder and executive director of StopTheDrugWar.org.
KBOO Community Radio, along with Street Roots Newspaper, is proud to co-sponsor Amy Goodman's Portland appearance Sunday, May 8th, at the Aladdin Theater. She'll be talking about Democracy Now! 20 years covering the movements changing America. Her new book, co-authored by David Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. And Amy will be doing a book signing after the talk. All proceeds go to benefit KBOO and Street Roots Newspaper. Again, that's Amy Goodman on Sunday, May 8th at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/democracynowbenefit. Democracy is coming to the
USA. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. The campaign for universal healthcare for every citizen is growing around the United States. Our local organization, Healthcare for All Oregon, has brought the movement to the stage for an outreach and fundraising mega concert featuring Vicki Stevens and the True Blue Lady Cat, Rosalind Hunters with LaRonda Steele, Terry Robb, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the event. Again, that's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, and happy Monday, everybody. You're listening to KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on the dial, KBOO.FM on the web. I'm Doug McVeigh, and this is More Talk Radio. Our regular hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, have the day off, so I'm just here keeping the chair warm for them. We'll be taking your calls at 503-231-8187. Let's get started about what we're talking about here. The United Nations General Assembly is holding a special session on drugs April 19th through the 21st at UN headquarters in New York. The world's leaders or their representatives will gather for this UNGAS, and the eyes of the world will be focused, albeit briefly, on the drug war. At the last UNGAS on drugs, which was in 1998, the very notion of harm reduction was controversial. Drug policy reforms were just not on the table. Non-governmental organizations that were reform-minded were pretty much left out of the process. At the end of it, in 1998, the UN embraced the drug war, endorsing global prohibition and adopting a wholly unrealistic and frankly absurd slogan, "A drug-free world, we can do it." Yeah, drug-free by 2008. You may have noticed they kind of missed that target. Well, this time around, there are nations voicing support for drug policy reforms, for harm reduction, and other evidence-based approaches to drug policy. Non-governmental organizations that favor progressive reform and effective drug control policies are finally being allowed a voice. This time, the UN will not be able to endorse prohibition. They're not going to endorse real reform this time around either, because the UN operates on consensus. It's not majority rule. They need unanimity. There are still several nations that stand opposed to effective drug policies, opposed to treatment, opposed to decriminalization, and that means we'll see a stalemate. But that's actually an improvement over the last time, and it's getting better. The outcome document for this year's UNGAS has pretty much already been decided. It's extremely bland. Nations will agree there's a need for a balanced approach. They'll affirm that human rights are important, and they'll agree that patients should get the medicines they need. But they're not going to have mechanisms to encourage it. There's no commitment to policies. It's going to be unsatisfying, and that's good. Because the three conventions that formed the international framework are outdated. They're moralistic, hypocritical. Oh, this is why the UNGAS is so important. We've been speaking out before, but this time the world is listening. One of the people who's been working towards this UNGAS for almost a decade now, who's been leading the work by non-governmental organizations, getting the foot in the door and then getting a seat at the table and getting a voice, one of those leaders is our guest this morning, David Borden. David Borden is the founder and executive director of StopTheDrugWar.org and the Drug Reform Coordination Network. He played a leading role in pioneering the use of the Internet for education and organization and drug policy reform after he founded DRCNet in late 1993. Dave he's one of the best out there. We are fellow board members. In the interest of full disclosure, I should mention, he and I are fellow board members for a private foundation called Common Sense for Drug Policy. Dave and I are also on the Council of Advisors for Students for Sensible Drug Policy. And he is on the phone line with us now. Dave, old friend, thank you for joining us this morning. I need more coffee. How you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you, and thank you for having me on this show.
It is a pleasure, Dave. It is a pleasure. Thank you for being with us. Now, I gave a thumbnail sketch about you and the work that you do. Could you tell listeners about some more about yourself and about DRCNet?
Sure. Well, I first got involved in drug policy reform in 1993. It was a time when the commercial internet was first, not first started, but it was still a work in progress. Maybe one in six people then were online, and I started posting bulletins to some of the early talk groups that were there, and building an email list, and it caught on, and had the makings of an organization. a short time later, funding opened up in the field for the first time through a group then known as the Drug Policy Foundation, being supported by George Soros, and I was lined up to get some support. And DPF actually invited me to move to Washington and set up for free in their office. It was still a separate organization, and I did that in mid-1995 and have been working on this ever since.
In fact, I remember some of those early meetings, you, Joey Tranchina, a few others, Eric Sterling, talking about this World Wide Web thing and using email, and sounded kind of interesting, and I guess it caught on. Yeah. So you do the Stop the Drug War, the Drug War Chronicle. You've got you've been involved in so much stuff. Now we're going to talk about some of that too. But I started out talking about the UNGAS, and like I say, for the better part of a decade now, you have been one of the people who has really been leading this effort by non-governmental organizations to, as I say, get a foot in the door, get a seat at the table, and have a voice in the discussions. The UNGAS is April 19th through 21 at UN headquarters. I've given a slightly long thumbnail. Could you talk a little bit about the UNGAS and this process we're about to be in? Oh, and before you do, again, I should remind people, the phone lines are open. We are taking your calls. The number here is 503-231-8187. If you have any questions or comments for me or my guest, David Borden. So, Dave, talk to us about the UNGAS.
Well, UNGAS, it stands for UN General Assembly Special Session. It's a type of meeting, high-level meeting that the UN has from time to time on different issues. And the drug issue, or on the world drug problem, as the UN titles it, was in 1998. I attended. It was the case back then that even the concept of harm reduction was controversial. I remember in an open discussion that took place. I believe it was the foreign minister from France making a passionate statement about the need for harm reduction, and then someone responding objecting also passionately. That doesn't happen now. There's a lot more acceptance of harm reduction, but not as much acceptance of the term harm reduction. And this is very much the case from the U.S. The U.S. is supporting a lot of specific types of programs that make up what harm reduction is, but isn't using the word. And activists from other countries tell me that this language has an impact. A friend from India who works on HIV/AIDS issues told me there's still kind of stuck in an abstinence-only model there, and the language, the way the language is being used now does have an effect of holding things back, and probably for a lot of countries that are dependent on foreign aid and that sort of thing. The big thing that's changed, of course, is that legalization of cannabis, at least, is moving now, and it's happening inside the United States, which for decades was the leading hardline enforcer of strictly prohibitionist approaches at the UN and in our own foreign policy. Today, State Department officials openly say that countries should have the right to set their own policies, including legalization, if that's what they choose. However, the U.S. also played, as far as I can tell, a leading role in discouraging any discussion of the text of the drug conventions and taking up language in them that does conflict with legalization. So it's a contradictory position. Perhaps the motivation is that they don't want to encourage people to talk about the idea that the the U.S. is in violation of the drug treaties, which is debatable, but more people think that we are than think that we aren't. And it's unfortunate because there could have been some discussion, at least, of treaty reform at the LGAS, which instead has been relegated to hints of it from some of the diplomats from countries that would like to see that kind of reform, or from NGO organizations and people like me and others speaking up when the floor is opened to us. I'd say the most heavily contested issue at this UNGAS is that of the death penalty for drug offenses. UN agencies have taken the stance that this is a violation of human rights, specifically of a treaty ban on the death penalty for all but the most serious offenses. Countries that haven't argued that drug trafficking is an offense with that degree of seriousness. And a lot of countries, European in particular, and some Latin American countries, have argued very passionately for language to be included in the UNGAS outcome document calling for an end to this practice. But hardline countries with a lot of power, like China, which has the death penalty and uses it, stand in the way of that. There's a big debate about this at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs meeting in Vienna last month. The CND is one of the three, one of the main mandated bodies in the drug conventions that has authority over drug policy. It consists of, I forget the number, but a subset of the UN member states actively participate there. Other member states can be there as observers. They stayed up till at least midnight. I heard midnight or I heard 1 a.m., I'm not sure which, on the last night of the CND, and that was at the heart of the argument. And there are reports that some countries may object to even having an UNGAS outcome document if they can't get certain concerns, including the death penalty, addressed in it. The guess that most of us have is that ultimately they'll back down and maybe put out their own statement. There's a lot of disagreement in the world right now as to which direction drug policy should go. It's not so likely to come back to the state of consensus that existed before. But for those of us who think there should be change, that seems like a good thing, because it opens up space for a lot of more progressive policies, including legalization, than has been the case before. The last UNGAS before this was 1998. It's not going to be another 18 years until the next similarly high-level meeting on drug policy at the UN, though it might not be an UNGAS. In 2009, there was a high-level strategy and political declaration, which, among other things, called for a review of it in 10 years. So 2019 was going to be the next very high-level UN meeting on drug policy. This UNGAS happened because a few countries pushed for it in hopes of moving things towards change. So once this UNGAS is done in a little over a week and a half, we'll be on a three-year plan looking at 2019, and by the time we get to 2019, November 2016 will have happened, November 2018 will also have happened, and maybe even 2017. Of course, I'm talking about, I'm sure you know, Doug, but for some listeners, there are going to be more legalization initiatives, including California, which, if successful, and I think we're fairly confident of having at least some successes, should move the dial further in our direction in U.S. politics and in the world, because people are watching. And so, 2019 is also a time of great interest. So that's a little bit about the young gas and what people are talking about there. That's what I have for that question, Doug.
Great. Now, just so people understand, we're not just, when we talk about harm reduction, that's a broad term, but it means, among other things, syringe exchange, like what we have here in Multnomah County. We have one of the nation's oldest. It's widely accepted. Heck, and Multnomah County Health Department is part of the part of that apparatus, as well as private organizations, nonprofits. And yet, it's only been in the last few years that the U.S. government has even been willing to allow people to use those words, harm reduction, in a grant proposal or in any other kind of thing. Otherwise, I mean, back in the when David and I were starting in the during the Reagan years and then the first Bush, the words harm reduction were enough to make sure that your grant proposal would never see the light of day. You'd be lucky to get published. It was anathema, and the most recent budget bill allows for federal funds to be used for syringe exchange, but the last one didn't. And that sort of off-again, on-again thing, even during this administration, has created some problems. So the idea that harm reduction, like syringe exchange, could be allowed, I mean, in some parts of the world, HIV/AIDS is out of control. And part of the problem is injection drug use, which we've learned there's a way to help and try and reduce the harms, stop people from dying and getting sick, and that's things like syringe exchange. Which we still have people at the UN who argue against. It's amazing. Now, there's a lot of
I would say that syringe exchange has moved forward fairly well. There's a great deal more in terms of resources needed for it, but even some of the countries with really hardline policies have implemented or begun to implement syringe exchange. They're saying that they have no choice. I think I heard Russia is doing that. They still ban and advocate against the other critical drug-related intervention for HIV and hepatitis C prevention, which is opioid substitution therapy, methadone, Suboxone, that sort of thing. But I think China, Iran have really put in place harm reduction programs. Iran definitely has, and it's interesting. Another branch of their government is executing people like that for nonviolent drug crimes, but they also invest a great deal in the public health side with UN support, I believe, and they're pretty open about that. Just one note on the U.S., what actually happened in the latest bill is that syringe exchanges can be federally funded, although I think municipalities can object to having one if they choose to. But syringes themselves, I believe, can't be paid for with the federal funds. But everything else can. And, of course, everything else is most of the budget. So that was a compromise they were able to get done this year, and it was really good news.
Oh, indeed. Oh, indeed. Good news for a lot of folks. And we have a caller. Someone has phoned in at 503-231-8187. So let's hear what Don is interested in finding out. Hello, Don. How you doing this morning?
Hey, Doug. I've been better, but I'll hang in there. Hey, and the fact is, just keep fighting a good fight. But hey, I want to thank you for having another show on this topic, because I've been thinking about it for a little while, because for a couple reasons. One is, you know, I've been in the medical marijuana program about 15 years, and I've always been, I always was kind of angry at the whole country and for just making this absurd policy when those of us who really need it know it works. And so it's good it's starting to change. You know, but I've never been a big supporter of people who sell other drugs. I had a lady on one side of me, she went to prison for dealing heroin. The guy on the other side, he was dealing pills for 10 years and before they kicked him out. So there's still a big problem, and I just personally and there's a perception too among these people that because I use the marijuana that I'm one of them. And then when they find out that I'm not so friendly about what they're doing and I don't use that kind of garbage, that they don't get, all of a sudden they get real hostile. So it's always been a real struggle. But I do have a lot of compassion for the users. They are definitely not, they're not criminals. But we definitely don't have as much compassion for the dealers. Hey, but I did want to mention this. Joanne Hardesty had on Jason Renault a few weeks ago, and he started talking about marijuana addiction, and it really made me angry because as I thought about it, I went back and checked the movie Reefer Madness, and throughout the movie they keep talking about the marijuana addict, describing it as being crazy, a rapist, and all this stuff. And it was just really kind of infuriating to hear the guy who's the head of the Portland Mental Health Association come on and start talking about marijuana addiction when, in fact, I don't think there is anything. If you have a marijuana addiction, take a nap. And then when you get up, don't smoke for a while. You know, it's pretty simple. It's not like other addictions where it's really, there's a physiological thing to it. You can argue and say that there's a psychological addiction, but, you know, there's a psychological addiction to anything that you enjoy that makes you feel good, that makes you happy. And so it's not, if that's the worst it is, that's just not anything to be, especially for a guy who's the head of the, you know, in a city like this, it's so progressive. So, Jason Renault, I'd like to see you resign. I'm calling for your resignation. And again, Doug, thanks for talking about this again for both of you guys.
Well, Don, thanks. And, decriminalization is a thing that's not legalization. Legal regulated sale, like what we're setting up with marijuana, is one thing. There are a lot of us who say that all of these drugs need to be legal at some level, because the illegal market is not something that should be really running the place.
Yeah.
But decriminalizing the simple possession and use, on the other hand, means that police can no longer rack up a body count by just doing a sweep and finding anybody who happens to have a bindle of heroin or a tiny amount of a couple of rocks of crack, so that they can fill up the jail cells and, as they create the body count.
And like Walter Scott, we know they can plant evidence on people.
Well,
they do it all the time, so it's a big problem. I'm going to list off there. Thanks, Doug.
I thank you. Thank you for calling, Don. And medical marijuana. Now, that's another one, too. You'd think, broad acceptance, several nations that are looking at it. Canada, of course, has had its program for many years, and they're looking at legalizing. And yet, we've always seen some hostility from UN, like the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. And, Dave, now, there has been some change, hasn't there, in how these agencies are discussing medical marijuana, at least some. Am I right or am I wrong?
There's certainly a change in how all of these issues are getting discussed. One of the refrains from agency figures and from countries is that the treaties have flexibility to allow for new policies. Now, that's a code for, I guess, two different things depending on who you're talking to. For a lot of people, and I'd say certainly for most of the UNHC people, that means you can do harm reduction, you can do syringe exchange, you can do safe injection sites, you can do heroin maintenance, you can do medical cannabis. And so move ahead, adopt these progressive policies that you want. It's also a code for saying, you know, we don't need to revise the treaties because we can do all these other things. But then, you know, legalization is another thing, though, and legalization is happening. So that doesn't really make sense. There's actually a third very unfortunate thing that it's a code for, which is countries saying flexibility means, you know, we set our own policies, and the UN shouldn't be telling us not to impose the death penalty if we consider this a very grave crime, or not to have these drug treatment, detention, labor camps, and so forth. Of course, the same country saying that you know, you don't tell us what to do. Some of them are in the very same forums are saying, don't do legalization and don't revise the treaties to allow for legalization. So they want to tell the rest of the world, including the United States, not to do what we want to do, but they don't want us to tell them what we think they should or shouldn't be doing. So it's quite inconsistent. But back on your question, I don't recall a great deal of discussion about medical cannabis in the official proceedings related to the UMGAS. Now, there is something happening in the World Health Organization that I don't know a lot about yet, but which we're hoping will lead to a formal review of cannabis as a medicine, which in turn would trigger the ability of the CND to take a vote on how it's scheduled, and the CND could reschedule cannabis to some less restrictive category. You know, the UN doesn't ban medical use right now, but the category that cannabis is in the UN schedule is a restrictive one, which in turn has an impact on how countries schedule it, which affects things like the regulatory burden for what countries are supposed to do to control it, which a lot of the poorer countries in the world, much of the developing world, it's hard for them to manage those burdens. Actually, in most countries on Earth, very few people have access to opioids for pain or for addiction therapy, even if they need it. It's a tremendous unintended consequence of the global prohibition regime and the drug treaties. That's an aside for now, although one of the biggest issues at the UN. So the CND could vote to reschedule cannabis to a less restrictive category as medicine. They could vote to deschedule it, remove it from the schedule entirely. And then the General Assembly can accept that or not. I have not seen a great deal of discussion about it, although NGOs certainly are raising the issue, and our mutual friend Michael Kravitz, a veteran activist, is doing a lot with that. Americans for Safe Access has gotten involved, so I'm hopeful there'll be more. I did not, certainly didn't feel like there's a lot of opposition openly to medical marijuana. Probably some of that is behind the scenes, countries, putting pressure on other countries for whatever reasons related to that.
Well, now remember, folks, you're listening to KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on the dial, KBOO.FM on the web. I'm Doug McVeigh. I'm a substitute host this morning on More Talk Radio. Our regular hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, have the day off. Our guest is David Borden. He's the executive director of DRCNet and StopTheDrugWar.org. We're talking about drugs. The UN General Assembly special session on drugs, to be precise, which is coming up April 19th through 21st. It's a UN meeting. What does that matter? Well, actually, matters a heck of a lot. I remember back in the mid-80s when the Oregon Marijuana Initiative was ballot measure 5 in the Oregon general election, 1986. We heard quite a bit from all kinds of people. Vice President, First Lady, a couple of U.S. attorneys. And one of the arguments that they made was that, well, we can't do this legalization thing because we agreed to these international treaties. And those international treaties, well, I mean, hearing people in the Reagan administration talking about respecting international treaties did take a little bit of that took some effort to listen to that with a straight face. But they were right. There are these international agreements we've made. And so this UNGAS presents an opportunity for the world to start looking again at whether what we're doing is working. And it's pretty safe to say that in some cases what we're doing is not. Some things we're doing are. The nations like, David, you just mentioned Russia, which is now starting to allow some limited substitution treatment. But for the most part, they don't, methadone is just... No. If you want to get off of an opiate, then just stop. And in this country, of course, we talk about, you know, opiate use and the so-called heroin epidemic, whether there is or not, is a topic for another show, hopefully soon. But in many parts of the world, there is simply not pain medication available. In some countries, a cancer patient in extreme pain is going to be told to take a Tylenol. Because, oh, we don't want to, you know, risk having this person get dependent on opiates. Well, if you're in a severe pain, you're in severe pain. And that's not going to go away just because the doctor says take 2 aspirin and don't call in the morning. So there's all these kinds of things that we have to deal with. And the international community is where all that's happening. So that's why we're thinking about this stuff. And in fact, that's why we'll be going. By the way, the number here, of course, to call in with your comments or questions is 503-231-8187. If you have questions for David Borden, questions for me, want to find out about this UN General Assembly special session on drugs that's coming up, you will be able to see part of it because it's webcast, and there will even be an archive available later on. Now, the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which David mentioned, I attended one of those with him back in 2008. Fascinating, interesting. Vienna International Center. So much tobacco smoke inside the building back then, it was difficult to breathe, frankly. A lot of smoking lounges because tobacco is legal. And it's, it's an interesting, it's fascinating, really. The CND meetings, you will not find on the web. They don't archive those. Once they're done, they're gone. So what a nation says, unless you're lucky enough to record them or to be blogging or be videoing. For instance, I record the audio, try and play it on some radio shows. There's a group called the Hungarian Civil Liberties Union. Our colleagues, Peter Sarosi and Isvan, and anyway, they do video and put up some videos, a drug reporter, the HCLU. And of course, there's also the CND blog, which is an effort by non-governmental organizations to live blog the proceedings. Because as I say, once they're done, they're done. But it's important. Like, for instance, this year, Canada. Canada said some great things this year. Can you tell folks about the Canadian presentations?
Well, I confess I haven't read it carefully enough. I did skim it, and it looked really good. And everyone was talking about it after it happened. I wasn't in the hall for that particular one. But a real reversal from what the Harper government had been doing, and lots of support for harm reduction and more compassionate policies. And the Canadians affirmed their commitment to moving forward with marijuana legalization. Now, as I recall, I did not see any mention of the treaties in that statement. Now, it may be that the Trudeau government, which is still very new, has not formulated a position or approach yet on that, and we think they ought to. A proposal that we've been arguing for, we and other NGOs have been, and a few countries have supported to date, is the idea of the UN appointing an expert advisory group to study the issue of treaties and the tensions in the international drug control regime and lay out what the options are for moving forward. And so if any Canadians can hear me via this Oregon station calling for that at the UN, at the UNGAS next week would be a positive step politically that Canada could do to advance the discussion of treaty reform.
There's a lot of possibilities coming out of this thing. As I say, it's a step along the way, but it's a major step toward opening up this discussion of real change. And it's not just about, I mean, yes, the cannabis industry, people are excited about this UN thing. I think some of them may be hoping to see a bump up in their share price, frankly, from talking about, oh, we're going to legalize, or oh, the U.S. will say great things. They probably won't. I think we were talking before, the U.S. may actually be trying to discourage any discussion of renegotiation of the treaties. Is that right?
Well, this is a third-hand report, or maybe fourth-hand, but I won't say which country this is, but delegate from one country last year told another activist that the U.S. sent them its document, what it wants from the negotiations, what they're asking, and usually it's extensive. And this time, the only thing it said was, "Don't bring up the drug treaties." Third-hand information. I don't have documentation on that, but. The U.S. certainly has been one of the countries using a loyalty oath-like term at these proceedings about committing to the conventions or the underpinnings of international drug policy and our cooperation, maintaining the integrity of the treaties, which is understood to mean don't revise that. But intellectually, that makes no sense. These treaties were written in the single convention was in 1961. The most recent of the three conventions, that dates to 1988. A lot has changed since then. It's the norm for treaties to be reviewed occasionally, get updated, hopefully improved, from time to time, so it's this quasi-Orwellian different standard for the drug treaties for them to be different and sacrosanct. And I don't see how that's going to stand up. I think there's more being done to undermine the integrity of these treaties by not taking up reforms to them.
Exactly, the whole notion of flexibility. How far can you flex them before they break? Flex your rights. You know, Dave, you do a lot of work. I mean, we're talking about the UNGAS because this is major. It's about to happen. But you do a lot of work on other projects as well. I mean, you've been working with and supporting one of my favorite organizations, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, ever since they started. SSDP conference, in fact, is coming up next weekend. Now, I presume you're going to be there. I'll try and make it at least for the last day if I can. Could you tell folks a little bit about the student movement and how that's been growing over the past over the past decade and a half? Oof, I'm feeling so old.
Sure. Well, Doug, if you can make it to the first day of the conference, I recommend the UNGAS panel. I believe 10:30 a.m. Or anyone else who is who's in the area, I recommend the conference. It begins Friday evening reception, and then Saturday and Sunday are the two main days. People will be riding up in buses from the conference for demonstrations at the UN the day before the UNGAS, and some students will be staying to attend it. Students for Sensible Drug Policy dates back to 1998. It started as one chapter at the Rochester Institute of Technology, which had a hostile administration. What happened also in 1998 is Congress passed this law that puts a question on the form for applying for federal financial aid, asking about drug convictions. And it specified, it's been narrowed since then, but at the time said that any possession conviction would get you a one-year ineligibility from the date of conviction. Two possession convictions or one sales would get you 2 years ineligibility, and three possession or two sales convictions would make it indefinite, not permanent, because there's an option still of going through a drug treatment program to get your eligibility back that way. It later got narrowed and currently applies to drug offenses committed when one is in school and receiving federal aid for school. And it almost got narrowed again to just sales convictions, and that actually passed the House in 2010. But bigger things going on around the health care and financial aid law, which got combined, prevented it from going further in the Senate. But that had a galvanizing effect, and we had some student activists show up, wanted to do something about this. Chris Lotlicker, Sean Heller, Brian Graudick, those people, and we worked with them to find find other students who wanted to do something. We paid some of the early staff time and got the first SSDP National Conference happening in the following year. The organization has grown since that time. It's pretty impressive right now what's going on. They say this is going to be the largest SSDP conference ever. I'm excited to see things this weekend.
It's amazing how much progress we've been making and yet how much there is left to do. And of course, before I forget, let's remember to do the station ID, because, you know, I got to do that once in a while. Remind people that they're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. Our regular hosts, Cecil and Celeste, have the day off today. I'm Doug McVeigh, sitting in for them. My guest is David Borden with DRCNet and StopTheDrugWar.org. Students. One of the things that, in fact, we've seen this here in Portland, the Portland State University, as the security department, the Portland State University's police for better, lack of a better word. They want to be real police, and so they get to enforce laws, carry guns, use them possibly. A little scary. These are the people you call to open up the door because you're having a meeting and the doors are still locked, or the people who come by to tell people to keep in the dorms to keep it down. And to think that these are actual sworn law enforcement officers who carry sidearms and are allowed to use them. In one case, I know that they're probably happening in others, but University of Massachusetts, a while back, their police agency was actually doing undercover drug investigations. At least one young man died of a heroin overdose shortly after he had been turned into a snitch for the campus police department, who had him do a controlled buy and bust a couple of people down the hall from him, who were moving some LSD and ecstasy, because they'd caught him with a couple of hits, and it was either risk losing your scholarship and having your parents find out, or just cooperate. No worries, no one will find out, except that it's going to go to court and you'll be named as a material witness, and so everyone will find out. But that's the kind of thing they do on these campuses. And, other famous cases, Rachel Morningstar Hoffman, who was an SSDP student in Florida and got busted for marijuana and a little ecstasy and got turned into a snitch by the local police. That was the local police, not the campus. But she was sent into a controlled buy to get a weapon and ended up dead. I mean, and these are the things that we're, it's easy to lose track sometimes because marijuana's everywhere and everything is the marijuana industry and we're all talking about cannabis and, oh, it's legal, so heck, this thing's almost done and dusted. Except that it's not, because in a lot of states it's not legal. And we've had 8 years of a presidential administration that's been fairly kind about the whole thing. So what's going to happen after November of 2016? Whew, that's going to be interesting. And, looking forward to that with great anticipation. Now, I have another question for you, and I know we're going to get another phone call because our phone line's open at 503-231-8187. Before we do, we have a couple of, I want to do some announcements about what's coming up later in the day. Coming up this morning at 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, Bill Resnick interviews Margot Black of Portland Tenants United about our city's rent crisis. Fran Michael reacts to Trump's declaration that women who have illegal abortions should be punished. Clayton Morgridge reads and shares his thoughts on the ongoing bombing of ISIS. Larry Bolden reviews Sarah Blake's novel, The Postmistress. And Tom Becker shares an excerpt from a Bill McKibben article, Global Warming's Terrifying New Chemistry. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. It's simple. I've done it. If I can do it, you can. Again, this is More Talk Radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Doug McVeigh, a substitute host in Just for the Day. Our regular hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, have the day off. And we are talking to David Borden of DRCNet and StopTheDrugWar.org. And still got a couple of minutes left. Dave, any kind of, any thoughts about where people should be looking, what people should be looking at in the next week or so as we do this run-up to the UNGAS?
Well, look to see. I'd say it can't hurt to write in or call up your local media or bigger media, suggest they cover this. Suggest they take a look at the reform side. We have some pages at stopthedrugwar.org/global. We have a statement we organized for the UNGAS, as well as another one, a letter we organized to President Obama with over 250 NGOs on it. many of the major HIV/AIDS and civil rights organizations and others. There's a campaign site that Open Society Foundations has sponsored, StopTheHarm.org, has some ways to get involved, petitions, things you can do with social media. Those are a few things that come to mind. You can always call your representatives, senators. I think your Blumenauer is from out that way. He's a great one. Encourage them to focus some moving forward on drugs and foreign policy and incorporating more of what's going on with reform here into what the U.S. government is working for abroad.
Those are some great ideas, and those are some good websites too. And that's that's really what it's at, where it's about. Because, say, back in 98, we didn't really have any kind of a voice. We didn't really have a foot in the door. We were able to watch and be there watching while the world's nations decide to embrace something that doesn't work. And after a lot of work and effort and dedication by a number of people, we've actually... non-governmental organizations are getting a chance to speak out. And some of these nations, maybe they're emboldened and encouraged by the fact that there are people out there speaking up. So places like Canada and Uruguay and Mexico and Colombia and others are talking about the need for change. So we won't see a drug-free world. We can do it in 10 years. We won't see that coming out, which is good. A little reality will finally meet the world's leaders at the United Nations. And we'll be back again. That's April 19th, 20th, and 21st. You can find more information about it at Dave's website, StopTheDrugWar.org. If you're interested, the 19th, 20th, and 21st, WebTV.UN.org will have live coverage of the General Assembly, and they will have an archive of those meetings later. What they may not show will be the demonstrations outside, because there will be a demonstration. There's an art thing. There will be students. There will be activists. People from around the world and around the country will be gathering in New York City, April 19th, 20th, and 21st. And it will not be to have a 420 smoke-in. It will be to demonstrate for human rights, for rational policies, for an end to HIV/AIDS, an end to the death penalty. It's easy to lose track when you're in a place that has a growing cannabis industry. It's easy to lose track of the fact that this is about a lot more than just whether you can smoke weed. It's a good thing that we can, but because you shouldn't go to jail for it, but it's a lot bigger than that. And that brings us up pretty much close to the end of the hour. David, I've got to thank you so much for being on the air with me today. I know this was a last minute, and I am so grateful to you for being here.
Well, glad to, Doug.
And thank you all for joining us on More Talk Radio. Thanks to Dave. Thanks to Steve for working the boards. My thanks to Kathleen and all the rest of the crew here at KBOO for letting me on the air again. Celeste and Cecil will be back in a week. On behalf of everyone, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more great radio on KBOO Portland. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
David Barsamian will be speaking as a benefit for KBOO Community Radio Friday, May 13th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. David is the host of Alternative Radio, now in its 30th year, and an award-winning investigative journalist. He will be speaking on one of the most critical issues we are faced with today, saving the planet that sustains us. Again, that's Friday, May 13th at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. All proceeds will benefit KBOO, your community radio station. Tickets and information for this event can be found at kboo.fm/Barsamian2016.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Eco Plumber, providing sustainable plumbing services to Portland and the metro area, including remodels, repipes, and repair, as well as green projects such as rainwater or gray water harvesting, and alternative materials such as 100% VOC-free green pipe. Information at 503-342-8244 or eco-plumber.com.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, a community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Patsy Kohlberg is engineering. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history, culture, politics, and current events than that of the corporate compromise news media.